There was a time in the not-so-distant past when New Zealanders thought nothing of drinking wine from a box. And when a glass of Chardonnay was considered posh, that was until we started producing some of the best wines in the world ourselves, and it became a billion-dollar industry for us. Grant Reynolds is a restaurateur and sommelier who wants to take the posh out of plonk so that everyone can learn the basics free of intimidation. He's the co-author of a new book called How to Drink Wine, The Easiest Way to Learn What You Like. And Grant Reynolds joins me now. Hi there.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
Good. Nice to chat to you. And I have to ask, first of all, as a sommelier and restaurateur in New York City right now during a pandemic, how are things going?
Oh, man. It's been definitely a challenging couple of months now. It seems to just keep on going. Obviously, I'm sure you all have heard that New York City has been impacted, you know, as the rest of the world. But this coming week, we'll open up one of our restaurants called Pasquale Jones for takeout and delivery, and then slowly open up our two other restaurants over the coming weeks, hopefully. So it's definitely a different time, but New York continues to stay strong, and the morale of the city has really been pretty spectacular. So I think we'll all get through it.
But I'm pleased to hear it. And you describe in the book, you describe enjoying wine as a journey. Where did your journey start?
I've grown up working in restaurants. I grew up in a small town called Lake Placid, New York, which is about a five-hour drive north of New York City, up in the mountains in the Adirondacks, definitely the country. But it's a town that is really based on tourism, so lots of hotels and restaurants. So as a kid, I grew up working in restaurants. And then throughout college, I really studied art and Italian and a variety of other more liberal arts focused subjects while continuing to work in restaurants, and it's always just been something that I've really loved. So for me, although I do love cooking, wine was kind of the area that I decided to devote myself to at a pretty early age, and have since, I'm a sommelier and now a partner in a few restaurants, as well as, you know, an owner of a small wine retail shop called Parcel. So I've kind of tried to hit as many different aspects of the wine industry as possible, aside from making wine. We'll leave that to the pros, so to speak.
And the premise of your book is that too much of the wine world comes with this note of condescension. Have you found that to be a barrier to people trying and enjoying wine?
Yeah, I think, you know, the thing that I find a lot of people, and whether they're friends of mine who aren't in the restaurant industry or in the wine industry, is that wine seems to be this thing that people feel as if they have to really learn about it and study it as almost, you know, an academic sort of approach in order to be able to understand it or, you know, get it, so to speak. But I really don't think that's true. You know, I think just like anything, if it's a hobby or just something that you want to know a bit more about, doesn't mean that you need to study it to the degree of becoming a professional. And so, you know, I think there's a lot of great wine books that do have much more of an academic, kind of encyclopedic type approach to them, which I myself, you know, definitely find useful in my studies. But our idea with the book was to write something that was fun and approachable for people who, you know, don't necessarily want to make this their profession, but want to have a little bit of guidance in terms of just, you know, being able to kind of break into wine and being able to understand the reasons why they may like something a little bit more than another wine, and being able to kind of grow their taste and the types of wines that they enjoy from that really sort of beginner's level. I wrote it with a friend of mine who has a food media site here. He's from the music industry. It's called The Infatuation. Yeah. I don't think they're in New Zealand yet, but they're in London and in every major market here in the US. And that was his approach. you know, in a lot of ways to how they started the infatuation was they were two guys from the music industry who were based here in New York City, and everybody was asking them, you know, fun places to go out or different restaurants to go out to for different occasions. And though they weren't like chefs or food critics, they really started what started out as a blog, you know, this type of writing and just approach to guiding people, whether it's to restaurants or now with our book, you know, to wine in a way that is a bit more, you know, for the masses and kind of fun and approachable rather than being studious.
Yeah, because if you're hanging out with friends and trying to decide where to go for dinner, you're not going to discuss, you know, which restaurant has a chef with the greatest technical ability. You're going to choose the place where, which is the combination of the right kind of atmos and location and all that sort of stuff. Is that sort of what you try and do with wine as well? Stop people getting hung up on the technicals and just try and match people with the right wine for the right moment.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, listen, if you, you know, there's a lot of really fascinating, important aspects of making wine or wine law, meaning, you know, if it says Marlborough on the label, it has to be a certain percentage of grapes coming from that area or whatever. But at the end of the day, that is so, you get in the minutia if you start to read about, you know, oak aging and legal alcohol requirements and all of these things that at the end of the day don't really tell you whether you're going to like the way that the wine tastes, right? Or if it's the appropriate wine to have with a certain dish or a certain time of year, which at the end of the day, that's much more common question or predicament that you know, we all find ourselves in is, hey, what should I just be drinking right now? And I know that I'm going to like it. I think,
yeah, and allowing in fact, that's what I love. Yeah. That's what I love about your approach, by the way, is, I mean, you talk about, you know, the right wine with the right dish. You have a great approach to this, which is just matched by region rather than worrying too much about the components of or ingredients of the dish.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's, you know, that was something I learned. I lived in Italy for a year in high school, and it's kind of a really, I don't know, intuitive approach is to, you know, there especially where wine culture and food culture have been so ingrained with each other for such a long period of time, right, is that the wines of a place and the food of a place are very symbiotic and work together, right? And it's almost kind of a perfect, whether that's like white truffles from Alba and Barolo that's grown in the same area, you know, those are some of the greatest like food and wine matches. So I think, you know, always a good go-to is if you're at a Spanish seafood restaurant is to have some coastal wines from Spain, even if you don't know, you know, the grape or have never heard of it, it's a good fallback to try.
Yeah, and that works in New Zealand too. If you're having some green shell mussels from Marlborough, you know, some Sauvignon Blanc would probably work well. If you've got some Hawke's Bay lamb in the oven, then maybe some Hawke's Bay Syrah. It's kind of it's surprising how easily it fits together.
It's almost dinner time here in New York. I'm gonna have some lamb myself this evening. So
yeah,
and
great.
A bottle of Syrah. Well.
So are there any words? By the way, if you just tuned in, I'm talking to Grant Reynolds, who's a restaurateur and sommelier, who's trying to take the sort of the pretense out of wine drinking and enjoying wine. Are there certain words associated with wine appreciation that you particularly hate?
I particularly hate. I mean, there's words that I think are very, that are commonly used, right? That I think people use without, you know, they use and they have a variety of meanings, right? So one word is the term when people describe a wine that they like as being dry, right? Is that I know what that means. That means likely that they want a wine that tends to be bigger, a red wine, right? That's kind of darker and richer. But dry can, you know, if you're like being really analytical about it, is that all wines, all table wines, as we know, are dry wines, right? In the sense that they're not sweet. So yes, when somebody says that, we can kind of steer them in a certain direction, but it's so broad that you know, you're not really like narrowing yourself down in any sort of way. And then personally, I think it can be kind of comedic, is especially some of my peers or people in the industry, there's this idea of like sommeliers and or people who are really into wine having like very kind of romantic and sometimes bizarre descriptors for, you know, the flavors and tastes of wine, which just, you know, are sort of laughable at the end of the day. Like, does anybody like truly know, you know, what like star fruit smells like at the end of the day, right? Like, I don't even think I've ever eaten it, but people will use it to describe wine.
Yeah.
In a way that you're like, well, I don't even know what that thing is, let alone like, am I gonna, you know, be able to like find a really subtle note of it in some Sauvignon Blanc, right? So I don't know. Those are my things. I try to use terms in terms of like, I do believe that wine can taste and smell like things that aren't wine, of course. But it's to use things that I think people really have like a clear association with in terms of describing it, rather than coming up with, you know, the most creative word to, you know, nail down a flavor that can just kind of be obnoxious.
Let's do some Q&A then. Do wine glasses matter? Does it matter what I drink my wine out of?
It matters only if you are trying to smell the wine, right? Because that's like, what's a good way to describe it is that things, when they're in a larger glass, right, or in a certain shape of a glass, and you can test this, like pour the same wine into a wine glass and then pour it into your water glass, it's going to smell more. Like, you'll just get more perfume out of it if it's in the wine glass, right? Smelling something out of the water glass, just based on the shape of it, is that the aromatics of the wine don't really come out, right? But at the end of the day, if you're just trying to, like, hang out on the couch, drink a glass of wine just because that's, like, the drink that you like, it doesn't really matter what you're drinking out of. But if you really are, like, trying to get into it and learn a little bit about something, then you should drink it out of a wine glass. It doesn't need to be anything elaborate, but you know, what we call like an all-purpose glass or a universal glass is great for, you know, virtually every sort of wine, and those are just kind of the tall standard ones. We don't need anything that's like overly elaborate. You see these kind of crazy shapes nowadays, or glasses that are you know, like a foot tall. We don't really need to get into that.
I like your quote from the book, which is that people who demand that a glass is crucial to your enjoyment of the wine is usually somebody who's trying to sell you a glass.
Exactly.
What about temperature? What temperature should we drink our reds and our whites at?
I think that for me is definitely something that I wish people would pay. I hope they can learn out of the book, because I believe that most people drink red wines too warm and white wines too cold.
Mm.
Right. And so, for me, we kind of came up with this rule there, is that if, you know, like myself, you don't have like a wine cellar with perfect temperature control at home, and you have like a couple of bottles of wine out on the countertop that, you know, you're going to drink, it's best to take that bottle of red wine and throw it in the fridge for 15, 20 minutes to bring it down in Fahrenheit, like 20 degrees from what normal room temperature is. So ideally, you know, 55 to 58 degrees. And then the same thing for white wine. So when white wine's too cold, all it will taste like is really, really crisp. And you don't get as much of like the body out of a white wine, or as much, it doesn't smell as much, which is totally fine if you're just hot outside and you want to have a super crisp, refreshing glass of white wine, then serve it as cold as you want. But I do think that, you know, a lot of the flavors in white wine, as it warms up closer to like 45 degrees, for more like Chardonnay and kind of white Burgundy, And then I would say for like Sauvignon Blanc, closer to sort of 40 degrees, 42 degrees, is a great way to go. But in general, I think people need to drink red wines cooler and white wines just a little bit warmer than what we normally do.
Okay, by the way, 45 Fahrenheit is 7 degrees Celsius, if anyone listening is interested.
All right.
if my white wine is not cold enough, can I chuck some ice cubes in it, Grant?
No. At the end of the day, you can, if it's not cold enough, you can put them in there, but know that at that point, you're really just having a drink, right? Like having a cocktail with the wine base, because you're diluting it, which is totally cool. But the second you do put ice cubes into it, the wine will definitely start to change in flavor. But if that's not a big concern of yours, then that's totally cool. Just go for it and make sure it's as cool as you want.
How important is where a wine is made or its origin story?
I think it's super important. You know, like New Zealand, here in America, is all of our grapes are not native grapes, right? So Sauvignon Blanc is a French grape, and Pinot Noir is the grape of Burgundy, right? And those are the sort of homeland of these grapes. And I think you've found places like, I don't know, Central Otago in New Zealand that really make great examples of some of these French grapes. But it definitely has its own flavor and it has a little bit of its own identity. And that's based on the weather there, and the soil there can change it, right? And that's the same thing with us here, is that California Cabernet tastes very different than Bordeaux, right? And that's really the only, part of it can be the influence of a winemaker. But the majority of it is just the temperature and the dryness. And it can be pretty dramatic. The most dramatic differences, I would say, come in the levels of alcohol. Really before like global warming happened, or it was as apparent, I should say, is that the alcohol levels in wine in France and in Italy for kind of those primary regions, right? Whether it's Bordeaux, it's Burgundy. The Loire Valley, where Sancerre, where Sauvignon Blanc originates, those wines all tended to be a little bit lower in alcohol than what we find in Australia, New Zealand, and America, just because the climate of those areas was much cooler, which changed the flavor of the wines for sure. So, I definitely think there's a lot of differences, and that's what keeps it interesting.
Yeah, and I should mention that you do love some New Zealand wines in particular. You're a fan of Saracen wines, who are a great organic biodynamic producer in Marlborough, and they have some story as well, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, I think it's a great winery. You know, unfortunately, we don't always have the best access here in New York to wines from New Zealand and Australia from some of these smaller producers that are really devoted to like the craft of the wine. But for me, it's been an exciting, an exciting region to discover, in particular the Syrah from that area and some of the Pinot Noirs I tend to really like. So
for people at home who are vowing to pay more attention to their wine and to take note of what they like and what they don't, you write that an exploration of the wine world begins with pouring a glass of wine and thinking about why you like it. I wonder if that's sort of easier said than done.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, for me, the first thing is just starting to pay attention, right? And I think, there's a lot of wine drinkers out there who figure out, hey, I really like Cabernet, right? Or I really like Sauvignon Blanc. And then that's the only thing they'll drink, right? And they'll never think, okay, I like Sauvignon Blanc because it is crisp, it's kind of tart, it's un-oaked, it's refreshing, right? Maybe I want to try something else. Because if you really break it down, I think there's kind of four broad categories of wine. You have the style of Sauvignon Blanc, You have the more like richer white wines, the style of Chardonnay. You have lighter reds, Pinot Noir. You have big reds, Cabernet, right? And those are kind of like the four main grapes that we all know. But the wine world continues to keep itself sort of in those sections. I'm sure there's some middle ground, but at the end of the day, if you like Sauvignon Blanc, chances are, for the same reasons that you like the way it tastes, you might like a couple of other Italian white grapes that maybe you've never heard of, or some other Spanish wines that, you know, if you want to mix it up and learn a little bit about it, then I think, you know, there's sort of a good place to start, is at least thinking, okay, why do I like this wine? Is it because it's refreshing, or is it because it's like so rich in flavor that it's impressive? And that'll help you figure out what category you're in and be able to build from there.
And finally, what's the best way to think about price and how much to spend? You know, the difference between an expensive bottle and an inexpensive bottle.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I think price for me can be determined in two ways. Is that I do think that there can be value in expensive wine. Right, wines like, again, from Burgundy, which is a really small part of France, to where, you know, if it says a certain vineyard on the label, then, you know, that vineyard may only be 50 meters wide and long, and so it's just a really finite area to where that can come from, right? So the supply of it will chase the price up. But on the other token is that, you know, here in dollars, is I do believe that it's really hard to find if you know, you're looking to spend like $5 or sub $10 on a bottle of wine retail, chances are that wine probably won't be organic, which I do think is really important, even if it's not on the label, that you support producers who are making of organic wine, just because it's a better quality of fruit. And there may be some like added coloring or added, you know, flavors into really, really inexpensive wines. So for me, like, if you're, you know, I totally understand that the people have different price points, and that's great. But if you want to get into like starting to think a little bit about the specific tastes of the wine and maybe where it's from, and, you know, that kind of learning of it, then, you know, you have to go like just one notch up from the least expensive bottle on the shelf to you know, have a little bit more security that you'll, you know, you'll be drinking something that isn't full of a, you know, bunch of additives and different flavorings at that point. So,
great, good advice.
In general, you know, I'm standing in our wine shop right now, and we have a whole bunch of really delicious value $20 bottles of wine, $15 bottles of wine that are from growers that are taking themselves seriously and really devoted to making something that's delicious and has a bit of signature on it too.
Well, the book is called How to Drink Wine, The Easiest Way to Learn What You Like. And I've been speaking with the co-author, Grant Reynolds, restaurateur and sommelier from New York. Thanks for your time today. Good luck with the book, and I hope you've been managing to enjoy some beautiful wine during lockdown.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, and I hope to see you all in New York at some point soon.